You're listening to a podcast by BI Norwegian Business School.
Welcome back to Stay Ahead, a BI Norwegian Business School podcast. This episode is part of Strategy as Practice series, where practice meets theory and theory meets practice. Today's topic is leadership through times. Today, I have the pleasure of having with me Helge Leiro Båstad. Helge joined Gjensidige in 1998 as vice president and was promoted to executive vice president just 2 years after. Already in 2003, he was appointed CEO and has now been at the helm for almost 20 years. Prior to joining Gjensidige, Helge was 11 years with Jordan, which is a Scandinavian oral care company, taking on various roles, including the last one as executive vice president for sales and marketing. Welcome, Helge.
Thank you very much, Thomas.
I'm also joined by Professor Ragnhild Kvåls Haugen, Professor Chair at the Department of Strategy and Entrepreneurship here at BI and the Center for Construction Industry. She has more than 15 years of teaching experience at all levels, but primarily at the executive and corporate level. Ragnhild has been a visiting scholar both at Stanford University and University of California, Berkeley. And her research areas and interests include strategic change and leadership, process and organizational innovation, and digital transformations. Welcome.
Thank you.
My name is Thomas Borgen, and I'm an industrial PhD candidate at the Department of Strategy and Entrepreneurship here at BI, and will be your host today. Helge, you started your career very successfully in the consumer goods industry. Then you went into insurance and finance. You know, someone might call that a brave move. How was it as a leader to come into what I presume was an industry you knew little about?
Yeah, it was a brave move, but it was something I saw lacked in the financial industry in general. And I had experience from brand building after 14 years in fast-moving consumer goods. And I also had experience in rapid change distribution models. So I saw that I had something in my background which I thought could be interesting for the finance industry, very regulated and actually outside, inside-out oriented distribution. It was only one distribution model I saw. It was branches, and the consumers, they had to come to the branches to actually serve themselves in the branches. And so I saw I had something that I could capitalize on in the finance industry. And it has been a fantastic journey. And if you look at the finance industry in the Nordics now, after my soon 25 years, it has been dramatic changes, both for banks and insurance companies.
That's a fascinating story. And let's speak more about that later, Helge. Ragnhild, I read an interview where you said that the literature and discussions about leadership in media is often pretty bad. I mean, that's a statement. Could you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, that's a statement. The reason why I said that, this was related to a visit we had here at BI of Jeffrey Pfeffer. He's a very well-known professor at Stanford University. And he has kind of a critical approach to what he called the management industry. So this is not the people that are doing management in organizations, but is rather the ones that are talking about how to do management in organizations. And I tend to agree with him because there is a tendency in this literature or in this branch to talk about the ideal management and the ideal leadership. And they create certain heroes, but as we all know, leaders, they are also humans, and they have strong and weak sides. And those also apply when they come into leadership positions. So, so even though it seems like they are very successful at one point, it might be in other situations where they do not have the same success. And I think this says a lot about what leadership really is. It's about finding the right way of leading in the context you are part of.
Very fascinating. And I think this is a perfect transition to actually to today's topic. And today, actually, I will ask you to kick off. So my apologies to you, Helge, but I recently read a fascinating piece of research by you, Ragnhild, and your colleague, Professor Rolf Petter Amdam, about how the discipline of leadership in Norway has been discussed and evolved since the early 50s. Could you just take us through, let's do the short version, with all the respect, of the historical development of this trend in Norway?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, that has been a fascinating study. And I have been very lucky to collaborate with an historian. Rolf Petter Amdam is a business historian. And we took kind of a historical approach to the development of the understanding of leadership in Norway. And it started actually after the Second World War. And it was kind of influenced heavily by the U.S., since we got a lot of aid from the U.S., the Marshall Aid, as you probably all have heard about. And in the realm of this, there were several consultants coming to Norway and trying to help Norway to understand what leadership is about. And you have to remember this time, I mean, it was like these large industrial corporations like Norwegian Hydro and Elkem and all those, they were really in business during the Second World War. But of course, they needed to change their way of working maybe after the war, and the competition changed also in the world markets. And traditionally, you know, I think if we talk about leadership in Norway, it has kind of been all the time since then a struggle between looking at leadership as general management knowledge and looking at leadership as something connected to knowing something about what the organization actually do. So it's this struggle between general management knowledge and knowledge about the organization and the things that you are doing. And this also reflects the type of leaders we have had in Norway. Actually, you know, if you look back, I think about 70% of the leaders in Norway have either education, business education, or engineering education. And this is a pattern that has been extremely stable since after the war. Although the weight has changed, so it used to be a lot of engineers, now it's more people with education from business school. But I think we can say that those two educational backgrounds are perceived as management education in Norway. But the interesting thing is that neither of these educations teach people to become leaders. And I think that that's very interesting because we have had some initiatives alongside with this. And two of the most prominent are probably AFF and the Solstrand courses. But we also have something which has been more secret, namely the Kenning School. And both these initiatives are related to teach or at least make leaders reflect on what it is to be a leader in an organization. And by that, I think we have had a lot more focus on general management or leadership compared to just being a very highly qualified professional and then going into a leadership position. So this is kind of still ongoing in the Norwegian business life.
Fascinating. And then I have to turn to you, Helge. You are one of the longest serving CEOs in Norway, now with more than 20 or close to 20 years experience. And during this time, you must have experienced a lot of changes in the business environment, customer behavior, regulation, just to name a few. And Gjensidige has also gone through many positive restructurings. You also got listed to the Oslo Stock Exchange. Do you recognize some of Ragnhild's research? And I appreciate that you were neither a CEO in the 50s or the 70s, but maybe the question should be, has the role of the CEO changed during the last 20 years?
I really think so. And, you know, it's also very important what you are responsible for. And, you know, when I started back in 1984, it was a completely different world. As I said, I started in the fast-moving consumer goods industry. And remember, the heroes in that kind of industry, and my company was Orkla first. That was really the products. So when we had this Christmas celebration with all employees, we had to stand up and make a chair for the products. So that was the background. And after 14 years, I started, as you said, into a completely new industry for me. And my background was not financial services. It was lots about technology. It was new products, absolutely completely new business for me. So when I started there, I had to actually be very transparent. What's my strong points and what's my weak points? And I saw immediately that the heroes in that kind of industry was the people, because the products were similar, technology was similar. So the brand builders in the fast moving consumer goods industry was the products itself. While when I come to Gjensidige in 1998, I saw immediately that this is about people. This is about the people serving the customers. That's the brand builders. That's the heroes in this industry. And I had to actually play a completely different role when I came to Gjensidige compared to my previous positions. So I think it's also important to discuss leadership related, what kind of leadership role you have. And of course, during my 25 years in Gjensidige, it's completely different now in banks, in insurance, and I would say in the Norwegian society itself. But it was something happened with my leadership style in 1998, because I came to a completely new type of industry.
I mean, it's a fascinating, because I think you responded then to Ragnhild, said you have to contextualize the leadership in where you are. If we then concentrate now during your maybe 20, 25 years, have you changed as a leader during that time?
I would say that it's leadership. You know, you have to love being together with people. And that's the starting point. And this is really important, because historically, You got leadership positions and then you were promoted and more salaries, et cetera, et cetera. Today, it's not about that. You could have a really decent salary by being an expert in the company. So you have to actually have a meeting with yourselves now and then and really take that discussion with yourself. Do you love being together with these people? Do you love asking all these questions? Do you love walking around and being together with people? And that's the basics. It was the basics, I think, 40 years ago and 25 years ago. And for me, since 1998, I think this has been more a continuously development journey. It's not dramatic changes in my leadership style. I came in without expert background, and that has been important for my role in the company, because I had to lead in a different way compared to, I guess, if I started in insurance in 84. And that has been important for my role over 25 years. I'm still not expert. I can't be an expert in a company like Gjensidige with 4,000 employees. But my development has been more continuously developed, not a dramatic change after 5 years, 10 years. It has been more regulation, more technology, more advanced. And these days we discuss how to actually incentivize people to come back to the office after the pandemic. That's a dramatic change compared to 1998. So it has been lots of changes, but my leadership role has been more or less the same.
This is fascinating. Listeners can't see this, but the professor is nodding her head when you spoke about the employees, because this goes to the heart of your research too, doesn't it, Ragnhild?
That's true. In leadership, we talk about kind of three dimensions of leadership. One is to have an orientation towards the task. Another one is to have an orientation to change. And the third is to relationships. And I think, based on my research at least, I think that the relationship part trumps all the others. Especially the higher you get up in the ranks. I think it's extremely important to be focused on the relationships when you are a top manager. That's kind of the core thing you should focus on. Yeah.
But let me follow up on you, Helge, because I think it's fascinating the way you describe it, that the fundamentals are the same. But a lot of research tells us that the average tenure of a CEO is 5, 6, 7 years. At the latest Harvard Business Review issue, they're claiming that actually the best performing CEOs actually sitting beyond 10 years, which is contrary to some of other predictions. There is no secret that ENC does perform very successfully. But how do you really renew yourself, even though you fundamentally believe in the same?
It has been, end of this year is 20 years. And after 10 years, everyone asked me, no, it's 10 years. What are you going to do next? And then we did the listing. And that was the next, actually. So I have had, it has been a journey after 25 years now with lots of changes throughout that journey. But it's a large company, lots of new people all the time. I have also had different kind of group management teams. And being together with new people all the time, new competencies all the time, doing new things together with all these people all the time, that gives me energy. So I have had that energy all the time. It's always also about setting really extreme ambitions, not on behalf of yourself, but on behalf of the company. And I think that's also important to secure that you will lead with new energy. So I haven't had the period in these 20 years now where I have thought about doing something else. It has been energizing, and I have actually had ambitions on behalf of the company giving me energy. So I have also a leadership theory that you have to rotate people to actually create stronger themes. So my leadership group management team has been different several times, and that gives also energy.
Exactly. And I think we need to really move into later in the conversation about how you really motivate the organization, because I think that's one of the key tasks of a CEO. But Ragnhild, you've done a lot of research and have a keen interest of how a CEO goes through various phases.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just give us some insight in the research on that area?
Yeah.
Because I think that was Helge actually was explaining.
Yeah, he did. Traditionally, and I think that also influences a lot of our understanding of when you should have a succession of a CEO. Because traditionally, you know, we say that when you are kind of 3 to 4 years into the CEO position, you tend to choose an enduring team. And then you try to stick with that for the rest of the time you are in the position. However, I think this is not my research, this is some other's research. I think this is, again, problematic because I think it depends on the situation. So I think the most important thing for a CEO is to renew him or herself. And Helge, he talked about how he did that. I think there are great opportunities for CEOs in position that has been there for a long time to renew themselves. However, it's related to their own ambitions of doing so. So it's about your own attitudes and whether you would like to do it or not. And of course, having the opportunity. But I mean, we know that market changed all the time. There are new opportunities that you can sense and size. So in that sense, I mean, if you are willing to do that, that's an opportunity. And you can also rotate people. And by rotating people, you get new insights, you know, from the people that are working around you. So there are great opportunities. And I think there is also, I'm very fond of the stability in top management position also, because I think the organization need that. I mean, we see too often that there is a shift of CEOs like every 3rd to 4th year, and that really stresses the organization. And I'm not so sure that that is always positive for the performance of the organization. So you know, finding this balance between stability and change, that's kind of the core in leadership, I think.
If I might, Thomas, I think it's also important to mention that our strategy has been quite stable and the same after during these 20 years. It has been about non-life. It has been now and then about bank and life. And it's been about Norway expanding to Nordic. So it hasn't been dramatic changes in strategy. If you have a company with a dramatic change in strategy, I think it's also important to look at the CEO. Do we have the right CEO for the new type of strategy? But we have been in more or less the same space with a continuously improvement type of strategy, doing better year after year with implementing technology, more customer orientation, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's important to also relate to the type of business when you discuss the duration for a CEO. I hope so, at least.
There's so many angles we can continue this conversation, but let me just stick with the last one about strategy and strategy implementation. So, and you described it as the environment is constantly changing, and you said some of the stakeholders' impacts has changed. Have you thrown out kind of a strategic plan? Do you do scenario building? How do you actually do strategic planning and or the implementation of those thoughts you're having?
You know, when I start, I came to the company and that was a mutual company, and everyone I talked to, they said we are really customer-oriented because this is our background. And in my opinion, we weren't customer-oriented. We were quite production-oriented. One distribution channel, the lead times was not good at all, but the whole industry was very regulated, inside-out oriented, etc. So it has been one main, I would say, vision for all my 20 years as a CEO. It has been to go from customer orientation to extreme customer orientation, to really understand what's the customer needs. And that has been the starting point for all kinds of strategy processes. And then it's about implementing technology. It's about bank and life and non-life, Norway, Nordic. This has changed during the time, but it has been one important vision for the whole type of my career. It has been to really take the customer orientation to a new level. And I think that has been important for the whole finance industry in the Nordic, if you look at the banks now and the insurance companies. Then my strategy process has been continuously. It has been during the whole year, and that has been also the last 5-10 years together with the board. It hasn't been only one meeting at summer or December. It has been issues during the whole year. And I also traveled with the board to Silicon Valley, to China, to really understand what's happening internationally. So the strategy process has been an ongoing process together with my group management team first, and then the whole team together with the whole board of directors as a continuously process during the year.
And Ragnhild, you work with a lot of top management groups. Does that resonate with you, what you hear from Helge?
Yes, I think so. I think, you know, I'm really fond of a good old guy, a professor in strategy, Henrik Mintzberg. And he says that, you know, you can plan the strategy, but the most important thing is to sense opportunities when they come your way. And if you're going to do that, you need to think about the strategy all the time. Because, you know, environments are dynamic. Things happen, you know. There might be mergers, there might be acquisitions, there might be new actors entering in new markets, which might challenge your position. So, you know, strategy is not stable. Strategy is dynamic.
And then we can go to, I think in academia, we call something dynamic capabilities, your ability to always adapt to the changing environment. How do you build an organization which is so dynamic that it can adjust, and you also get the feedback loop so you can adjust your direction if needed?
That's the really big question, actually, because the speed is increasing and it's about to be more agile. Agile is the new word for everyone. But if you jump into our company and you look at our legacy systems, that's really old systems from the 90s. And it takes days and weeks and months actually to do changes. So we have to really work with the organization to go from this waterfall development processes to a more agile type of development. That's about culture. That's about new people, more technology into the organization. And we also have to work with the boring things, which is the legacy systems, the prerequisite to actually act in an agile way going forward. And we do both. But you know, as I said, it has been very regulated. It has been inside out until 90s, while the fast-moving consumer goods in US 40s, 50s, and 60s was really competitive and really customer-oriented. So we have a short history of really being an extreme customer-oriented type of organization and industry. So this is about working with people, new competencies, the boring things which is in the basement, the core systems and the prerequisite to actually act in an agile way. We are doing all these things. And the really difficult balances is between testing long-term hypothesis versus doing everything better next day and next month and next year. And as a listed company, you know, it's about actually improving your business from month to month, quarter to quarter, year to year. So this is actually a difficult balance between testing, working with the organization to secure you are strong in 2030, and also doing the right things to be priced in a good way and being very fit next year also.
Basically, short-term, long-term, medium-term.
Yeah, it's difficult.
It's finding that balance. What's the research tell us here, Ragnhild?
Finding the balance
and the leader's role in this.
I they say that you need to think about the both at the same time. However, what we see is that I think a lot of managers, they tend to get very trapped in the more operational, the short-term. And I think there is a huge pressure for that when you are listed, because you have to report, you know, to the stock exchange in certain periods. So I think it's important not to forget, think about the long term. And there has been done several research on how much time do CEOs and the top management use on strategy work. I mean, on the average, 20%, and I think that's too little. So especially in today's environments. So I think that it needs to be more in focus. And this is also something about, you know, how top managers organize their workday. So they need to be sure to get out a little bit on the operations, but not too much, because they need to understand operations. But it mustn't overwhelm them, you know. They need to have the time and ability to think more long term.
But then there must be the dilemma for the board of directors, because if the average tenure now is as short now as 3, 4, 5 years, how can a CEO really plan for the future? And are we saying indirectly that boards may be too impatient?
I think so. There is an old study which go very way back, and it has been criticized a lot, but you probably heard about it, the Collins study about why do some firms have success while others have not. And one type of leadership that I identify is what they call this fifth level leadership. And that's the kind of leadership where you are kind of humble on your own way, but you have a strong will on the organization's behalf. And I think that that's a challenge when you have these very rapid shifts of CEOs, because then it comes, then it becomes more important to show off, you know, externally rather than working with internal organization. So that's a challenge. So I think these humble leaders with a strong will for your organization probably are the best for your organizational performance in the long run.
And just reading myself up on many of your comments externally, Helge, you speak a lot about the people, about the organization, and about the culture. And I also know you are famous for, and you burn for this rotation. Yeah. Can you explain that to the listeners?
No, it's some years ago, many years ago, I discussed with the group management team, because technology was more and more important to really understand in the business divisions, not only the technology department, because today to really understand how to develop the business, you have to, this is more and more technology oriented type of business. And I said that we need to actually recruit more executives with technology backgrounds into the business and vice versa into technology to really understand this dynamic between the different kind of divisions internally. And the group management team said, that's a good idea, Helge. Let's do that. And they all thought about doing that the level under themselves. But I started with the group management team because this is about skimming milk. You have to start at the top, you know, to have the right rotation downwards. So if you move from one position in the group management team to another one, you typically take some of your best performing leaders with you. And by doing that, you have this rotation continuously. So after 2-3 years, everyone knows that they can have a discussion with me that it's a new position soon down the road. And this was quite new, actually. So when I talked to the analysts internationally, they didn't understand this, because when you have a winning team, why do you change? And that was actually the feedback from my group management team. Helge, don't rock the boat. It's a winning team. But I think this is important, actually, to develop. And, you know, if you do it in this way, you also do it with type of, it's not uncertainty. You have the right certainty in the organization to they are not, they do not fear for their position in the organization. They do not fear being kicked out of the company. They know that this is a company-oriented way to develop the culture. So we have done this for the last 12 years, actually, and it has been successful. I recently did another one, which is very strong and very good, and everyone is happy, actually.
Very, very good. Ragnhild, I mean, you also work with this kind of thinking about, is leadership a profession itself, or how much functional leadership do you or functional competence do you need, or how do you find that balance? You could do it at the CEO level, or you could do it at the just level below the CEO. What's your thinking here?
I think it's super interesting, this leadership philosophy. Can I call it that?
Yeah, I hope so.
because first of all, there are many positive things about it. First of all, I think you know, most people in the organization, they would like to learn new things, and they get empowered by learning new things. So by rotating people, people get the opportunity of develop their competence within the firm. And that makes them less likely to search for opportunities outside the organization. So that's one thing. The other thing is that there will be, you know, when new people come into a new topic, they look at it with a different perspective compared to the people that have been there. And I think that's very useful for innovation and new development in organization. I mean, we know all about this from we should put together multifunctional teams when we are doing innovation, because then they can strengthen each other. They have different knowledge bases and so forth. So I think that by doing this, you get kind of a natural innovative environment in a way. And I also think that you, as a CEO, get renewal of your knowledge.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that gives me energy all the time. May I, Thomas, just a short comment for you, short-term, long-term. and the discussion in the group management team and the board of directors, I think the most important part of these discussions is the employees. Because the employees in the organization, in my organization, they don't want to be in an organization not having strong focus on sustainability, which is a long-term task, and also strategy to survive in 30 and 35. They know that I will do something else before 30 and 35, but they want to be in an organization taking, using significant time to actually secure that we will be strong also in the future. So it's not only about the group management team and the board of directors, it's also about having the right employees with the right motivation to actually be in the company. They don't want to be in a company only dealing with short-term issues.
What's the slogan again for Gjensidige?
Tiden går, Gjensidige består.
Exactly. Yeah. That just reminded me when you said it's something which is continuous. And Gjensidige is more than 200 years, isn't it?
210 years now. 210 years. Around, yeah.
But I think the fascinating theme is this, let's call it the dynamic capability. They always are just keeping the energy within the organization. And you also mentioned that now you rotate your employees, but do you ever get fresh blood into the organization?
We have to do that, of course. And you know, if you only rotate the same people all the time, that's not a good idea. So it's a good balance of recruiting new expertise, new leadership competencies, also people from other industries, like I had 25 years ago. It's lots of discussions now related to business models, service innovation, etc. So it's important for us to understand what's happening in other industries and also recruit people, leadership and expertise from other industries. But it's a good combination, I would say.
Is there any particular industry or industries you look at now where you get inspiration?
In the Nordics, I think, like Schibsted, the telecom industry, internationally, it's lots of good examples also within finance. But I would say that Norwegian or Nordic banks and Nordic insurance companies may be among the best in the world when it comes to our industry. So it gives me more enough to look at my main competitor in the Nordics, actually. So when I travel to US, UK, Far East, it's seldom I really I'm very impressed of what I'm seeing in the finance industry internationally. I can find that in the Nordics.
That's interesting. Ragnhild, you do a lot of research on the factors or maybe the important factors of a successful strategic change. How would you list that up for the listeners? What should you look for the issues around that?
Yeah. I think the most, I said it earlier, but I think the most important thing is to get the people along with you in the process. And actually, you know, it's a lot of thinking, you know, traditionally within strategic change, that this is something that the top management actually is doing. But that's not the case at all. It's the people in the organization. And if you don't mobilize the people in the organization, it will never happen. Of course, the top management sets a direction, but I mean, that direction needs to be understood by the people in the organization. And together, they co-create the change. So successful strategic change is about doing this co-creation process. And that brings me back to this important role of relationships in organizations. So I think that's one of the key things to focus on. Yeah. Mm.
The listener can't see it, but every time Helge speaks, he speaks with a lot of energy. And I know you do a lot of research, Ragnhild, on authentic leadership. Mm-hmm. What is authentic leadership? Because when I see Helge, I kind of feel that's authentic.
Authentic leadership is basically leading from who you are as a person. So it's basically finding your own way of doing leadership. And that brings me back to these discussions that we had based on Jeffrey Pfeffer's saying that we should be skeptical to the management industry because you know, as I said very often when I talk with the leaders, I said, leaders are only humans. They have strengths and they have weaknesses. And it's important to be aware of the weaknesses as well. And then, of course, trying to do something about it, not to, I mean, you can do some measures around it, but it's important to know yourself in the leadership position. So where you can lead from, basically. Because leading is about creating energy and inspiration. That's basically what it is. And if you cannot do that authentically, it's very difficult to influence people.
If I take that into my journey in Gjensidige, you know, I came into that this industry without any expertise from the industry. So my communication from the beginning was quite simple, actually. Simple language. It was about communication, much communication. And I came into a company with, I think it was 9 levels between the CEO and the front people serving the customers. And I really thought quite early that we have to reduce we have to increase the span of control and secure that it's a shorter way between the people serving the customers and the CEO. So I think in 2003-04, we were down to 3-4 layers between the CEO and the front people. So it has been about communication, simple language, increased span of control. And that has been my leadership type of style, I would say, in Gjensidige. If I had started my career after the business school in 1984, I'm not sure I have been the same type of leader in Gjensidige. So, because then I maybe had some more expertise in one field, I maybe would have been used a different kind of language, more complicated language, etc. And you know, today, lots of technology, lots of fancy words from business schools, etc. But I think simple language, lots of communication, and being together with your people, I think that's successful.
You make it sound pretty easy to be a CEO, but I'm sure it's not always that, huh?
It's easy when you have very good people and not very disrupting type of competition. And we have had very rational competitors. I have had stability around me, very good people on the operational side. Then you can work with strategy. You can work with type of service innovation and development. And of course, you can work with the organization, the culture, the people. And I use my time, I would say, the majority of my time is working with investors, 20% maybe. And then I use 20, 30, 40% in the organization, being together with people. And this is combination with strategy development. I do not sit down in the complex operational issues from day to day, month to month, because I have very strong leaders doing this.
Very, very fascinating. What's your reflection on this, Ragnhild?
Yes, I totally agree. I mean, you have different roles compared to where you are in the leadership hierarchy. And I think it's important to understand that. And that's often difficult for people who climb the ranks within the organization because they tend to take with them the legacy they had from the previous position into a new position. And I have experienced that a lot working in very knowledge-intensive organizations, you know, like doing research in those organizations where you have these very specialized engineers that really cannot let go of their speciality, even though they enter into management positions. So I think that, you know, that's, I think you need to understand where are you in the hierarchy and what is your role within the hierarchy and focus on that and trust the people below you. That's important.
But I think, if I may, Thomas, it has been, and this is a huge discussion regarding George Kenning and a leader can lead whatever he or she wants if you are a good leader. I really think you have to understand the industry. Mm-hmm. I really think you have to have deep understanding for the main drivers around you, which is technology, regulation, consumer behavior in my industry. So do not take this as a view that a leader can lead whatever he or she wants. I don't think so. I think it's more and more important that you really understand the main drivers of the industry you are leading in.
Basically the context.
Yeah.
I totally agree. So I think that, you know, the way we are trying to figure out leadership in a Norwegian context is fairly good, because we try to find this balance between having knowledge about the industry that you are leading and at the same time also nourish leadership knowledge. So it's a combination, and it's very, very difficult to make good decisions on behalf of the organization if you don't understand what they are doing.
I think this is a very nice way to end the note, but you wanted the word?
It's a final comment, I think. Yeah. And if you look at my career, I have been working for Norwegian companies all the time. I think that's also important, because I have had friends working with for American companies during the 90s and 2000. And it's a completely different type of language. It's much more about me instead of we. So I think that's also important to really understand that it's main differences, cultural differences around the world. And my career has been a Norwegian type of Norwegian Nordic career. And for me, it's about we. It's a we culture. I think that's also important to, when you're talking about leadership, you have to understand what context and what type of company are you leading. If I had a background from Coca-Cola into Gjensidige, I'm not sure if my career had been the same in Gjensidige.
That's interesting. But then I will maybe ask for advice from you to Ragnhild and maybe myself. So is there any particular things you think we should change or adjust as educator of the next generation leaders?
That has been discussed over years. And, you know, this to really understand the impact of sustainability issues, I think that's important to really be in the forefront regarding sustainability. It's so important. And I have met this, I thought some few years ago that this is about competitiveness, and it's important to have this to recruit the right people and have the right type of customers over time. This is so important. 5 years ago, the students from BI and NHA came to us and asked for salaries and bonus and things like that. The first question, though, is about sustainability. I think that's really important. Then you have to implement even more technology into the programs, because at least when it's about services, it's about technology. It's so important. And finally, ethics in business is also important. This is quite, maybe a couple of them, soft issues, but it's really hard issues, sustainability and ethics. It's so important. I think you have to focus even more on that.
But on behalf of BI, I can confirm that we are having a lot of focus on that. And I know Professor Kvålshaugen is also focused on this research.
I know. It's differences between these business schools also at the moment.
But I think you're spot on. But I can see that we can continue for a long time. This has been a very, very interesting conversation. I hope your listeners were enjoying this. And thank you for this time, and see you next time. Thank you very much.
This is a BI production. Listen to more podcasts. Go to bi.no/podcasts.